Coming up on Floss Weekly, the show all about free Libre and open source software, we have the Turmeric project from eBay, unexpectedly presented by Simon Phipps and Dan Lynch. It's coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Simon Phipps and Dan Lynch. Episode 201, recorded February the 8th, 2012. Turmeric. This episode of Floss Weekly is brought to you by Netflix. Watch thousands of TV episodes and movies on your PC, Mac, iPad, iPhone, or TV instantly. All streamed directly to you, saving you time, money, and hassle. For your free 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit. Welcome to Floss Weekly, the show where everything related to free Libre and open source software is discussed fluidly and with an English accent these days. I'm Simon Phipps, and I'm standing in for Randall Schwartz, who has unfortunately injured one of his muscles and is laid up, unable to type or even to lift beer. And co-hosting with me this week, I've got Dan Lynch. Dan, welcome.
Hey, how's it going? Yeah, I'm kind of standing in for you, and you're standing in for Randall, so there's some kind of procedure going on here. Yeah, it's good to be back.
It's going to be mayhem, because I don't think either of us was really expecting to do what we're doing here, so I'm expecting there to be pieces laying all over the floor when we've finished here.
Yeah, as the famous poster says, keep calm and carry on.
Yes, absolutely. So, I missed you at the weekend. Were you in Brussels with me at the weekend?
I wasn't, unfortunately, no. But you have just come back from FOSDEM, haven't you? And you gave a talk as well. So how did the talk go?
I actually did the keynote on the lunchtime on Saturday at FOSDEM. And I was announcing that the Open Source Initiative is opening up to become a member-led organization. So I was announcing our initial tranche of members. That includes Apache and Eclipse and Linux Foundation and Mozilla and Joomla and Plone and Drupal and Creative Commons and KDE and my apologies to all the others who I've forgotten. And they're going to come together and form a college of wisdom to help us reinvent OSI for the 21st century. So a very exciting set of announcements. And you can read all about that on the OSI webpage. That's at opensource.org. And I've posted full details up there so people can find out about it. So that was the half hour in the middle. Rest of FOSDEM was pretty interesting as well. There were some really good dev rooms there. Maybe we should explain for listeners that FOSDEM stands for the Free and Open Source Developers European Meeting, and it's probably the world's largest free software conference.
Mm. Yeah, it's very big. I mean, I'm not sure what the attendance was this year, but they regularly get 5,000 plus.
They were guessing it was 5,000 or 6,000. They'd opened up a new building this year, so as well as being the normal full buildings, and it's held at the University of Brussels, Université Libre Bruxelles, and I hope you like my accent there. And
very good.
They'd added on another building with a whole load of new meeting rooms. So despite feeling full, it was full plus another full building. So they must have had at least 6,000 people there. And there was a dev room for a new dev room for legal issues there that was very interesting. Joined in with that and heard people talking about all the legal developments that are happening around free and open source software. I sat in on the Libre Java dev room, which is very interesting. There were some the core developers from Oracle were actually there talking about OpenJDK in the future. Very open discussions from Oracle employees at the conference. Very encouraging. And then there was far more than I could possibly attend going on elsewhere. So, I'll have to listen into Linux Outlaws. I think you're doing a show about that coming up soon, aren't you?
Yeah, unfortunately I wasn't there, but my Linux Outlaws co-host Fab, he was there. He's a bit closer in Germany, or he can drive there. So yeah, I couldn't drive there. But yeah, he's going to have some interviews and stuff. And I meant to ask you about the legal issues Devrim, because that was actually organized by some friends of ours. Tom Marble was very involved, and also Bradley and Karen, who do the Freers and Freedom podcast as well.
They were there, and they had John Sullivan, who's the executive director of the Free Software Foundation, was there as well. So they had a pretty good room with some interesting discussions. Some of the discussions a little bit, politically correct. Some of them, watching Richard Fontana from Red Hat trolling Bradley Kuhn from the Software Conservancy was great fun. It was absolutely awesome. So I think if people want to know more about that, they need to tune into Linux Outlaws, and we better bring on our guest, I think.
Yes, we should, yeah.
So do you know anything about the subject today? I'm reading my notes here. The guest is Sastry Maladi, I think that's right, from eBay, and he's talking about a project called Turmeric and eBay's open source initiative. Do you know anything about that, Dan?
I know a little bit about Turmeric. As you probably be able to tell, it's mainly just from what I've managed to research when I found out I was going to be doing the show. It's basically enterprise middleware, and he will give us a much better explanation, I would imagine. But basically, yeah, it's a platform that allows them to build their applications and distribute the kind of the business logic between different nodes and make it all scalable and stuff like that. So it's all based on Java. It's written in Java, so seems to be highly used within eBay, and they've actually open sourced it, and it's going to be great to hear about their reasons also for open sourcing that and where they plan to go with it in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to be very interested to hear about their wider open source vision and find out about that. So looking forward to talking to Sastry in a moment. Before we bring Sastry on, we should give some recognition to Netflix, who are the sponsors of this episode of Floss Weekly. Netflix streams thousands of TV episodes and movies directly to you instantly. And that means you save time, money, and hassle. There's several easy ways to instantly access streaming movies and TV shows with Netflix. You can watch Netflix movies and TV shows on your Mac or PC or iPad. You can watch on your iPhone and on some Android phones too. If you've some kind of a gaming console, an Xbox 360 or a PS3 or a Wii, you can watch Netflix right on your TV. If you're not a gamer, you can watch Netflix on your TV using something like an Apple TV or a Roku box that are inexpensive and easy to use. With Netflix, you can watch movies and TV shows instantly using any of these devices, and you can begin watching a movie or show on one device and then finish on a different one, which is great. Whichever way you choose to access Netflix, you can watch as many movies and TV shows as you want, anytime that you want, and you can cancel anytime. So you can try Netflix today for 30 days free. For your 30-day trial, go to netflix.com/twit, T-W-I-T. Be sure to use that URL when you sign up for your free trial. That's netflix.com/twit, because that way they'll know that you love their support for this show. We'd like to thank Netflix for their support of Twit, and we hope you enjoy watching instantly with Netflix. So with that, let's bring on our guest. And so I'd like to welcome Sastry to Floss Weekly. Sastry, welcome.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, Simon. Thanks for having me.
So apparently you work for eBay, looking after the middleware architecture. Could you tell us a little bit about why you're on Floss Weekly? This is a free Libre and open source software show. So what is eBay's middleware architect doing on Floss Weekly?
So that's an excellent question. So eBay, not many people actually know, is a strong supporter of open source. From the beginning, eBay has always been using open source products, but what we have done recently, about a couple of years ago, and started a couple of years ago, open sourcing some of our own software and products that we created that we believe are useful for the community at large. And so we open sourced some of our products, starting from something called Turmeric, which we'll talk about. And I guess I'm in this show explaining about how eBay is connected to open source and what our interest is and how we want to contribute to the community.
That all sounds very interesting, because I once upon a time I had a job rather like that at a company that used to exist that you might have heard of called Sun Microsystems.
Yes.
And we spend a lot of time getting all of our software open source. So does eBay have a commitment like Sun had to get all of its software open source? Or what is eBay's strategy around open source?
So anything that's really not eBay proprietary, eBay specific, any e-commerce logic, for example, we definitely want to open source. All of the technology projects that are not necessarily specific to e-commerce, we definitely have a commitment to strategy to open source them. Absolutely.
Excellent. So how many projects are there that you've got as open source? We're going to talk about Turmeric today, but how many others are there?
So eBay, the projects that originated within eBay, there are about three that are currently open source: Turmeric, VJet, and something called QLIO, which is similar to YQL and GQL kind of stuff, but it's actually pretty interesting based on Node.js. But eBay also contributes to a lot of the existing projects like Hadoop and HBase and what have you, some of those projects too. So,
Right.
So, and a few more are, few more are on the way as well. I mean, we're working on the three or four more projects this year, potentially going to open source a few more.
Right. So let's dive in and look at Turmeric, and maybe we can come back from looking at that and look at the wider picture afterwards. So what is this Turmeric thing? I mean, I put it in my cooking. What is it?
Yeah, so Turmeric obviously is a spice. We actually wanted to go after a spice theme. We named a lot of our internal projects based on a theme. But really, you know, in fact, the reason why we chose Turmeric as a name is just for, you know, performance, self-healing, herbal values and whatnot. But what is Turmeric? Turmeric is really a comprehensive, policy-driven, service-oriented architecture platform. I know it's a lot of buzzwords in there.
So, absolutely.
Yeah. So what we have done, in order for any of these internet scale companies to scale today, you need to service orient your enterprise, right? You need to build reusable components so that you can quickly build different applications and maybe throw them away if they don't work and start leveraging all of the work that has already been done. For that, we needed a good platform that allows the developers to develop these services, develop those applications, and so on. So Turmeric is really that platform that allows you to do that. It is comprehensive in terms of it has, you know, starting from developer tools to operational tools to actual, runtime, you know, the whole nine yards. It has everything in it. That's really what Turmeric is in a gist.
Right. So that sounds like you've taken all of the development that you did all around basically building your own framework, and you've put all of the different parts in a big box and labeled Turmeric on the outside. It sounds like it's everything.
It's everything with respect to related to SOA, the service-oriented architecture. I mean, it's not everything outside of the middleware, but it covers developing services, managing them, monitoring them, consuming them, and managing the lifecycle using a repository and things like that.
Right. So this is actually the framework that eBay itself is running on, is it?
Yes. eBay actually has about 300-plus services built on this framework. And, billions of messages per day being served on this framework.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so it looks to me like it's just looking through the web page here, looks like there's probably a load of Java in there somewhere. Is that right?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the last word. So,
looks like there is a load of Java code in there somewhere.
Yes, it's a lot of Java code. This framework is built on Java. And although the applications, the consuming applications can be written in any language, but the framework itself is written in Java. And we have also included a whole bunch of Eclipse plugins for making it easy for developers to develop a service as easy as developing a simple Java class. Just like you do like a file new Java class, file new interface in an Eclipse, you would do a file new service, and rest of the thing is taken care of. The developer focuses on writing their business code. I mean, those kinds of tools are, it's a Java-based framework.
Right. And so the fact it's in Java, does that mean it's platform independent? Is this going to work on my Linux distribution?
Absolutely. It is platform independent. In fact, within eBay itself, we run a lot of these services, some on Linux, some on Windows, some on Mac and Solaris and so on. So it is platform independent. We do not use any JNI specific calls, and therefore it is platform independent.
Okay. And does this work on OpenJDK, or do you have to use the Oracle runtime?
In fact, we tested this with both Sun and IBM JDK, and there's no reason why it won't work on any other OpenJDK, because there isn't anything that proprietary that we're using in there, standard Java APIs. But we have tested this successfully with both Oracle Sun JDK as well as IBM JDK.
Right, right. So we don't actually know if it's going to work on OpenJDK, because there's a little bit different in there.
Well, actually, some community member, now that you're asking, I remember, somebody has actually asked this question and tested and found it to be working. I can't say that for sure. I need to go back and look at that thread.
Right, right. Okay. Yeah. And so the code that you've got on there, is there anything bundled already in Linux that I can get started with? Is there, you know, can I go apt-get a package to get started with this? Or am I going to have to set up a custom environment?
It's not a custom environment. We've not created an RPM-ish, if that's what you're looking at. But what we have is, if you don't want to actually build it yourself, there is a downloadable tarball. You can just download and untar it, and there you go. You can start working on it.
Right, right. So tell me about your community around Turmeric. Do you have very many other co-developers involved in writing it and creating it?
So initially, because this project initially originated in eBay, a lot of the work initially has been done by the eBay developers. And then when we decided to open source it last year, few of the developers from another partner company called Intellio, they've also joined. So there are about, you know, five or six developers from Intellio. And we also get some patches and bug fixes from outside of eBay and Intellio as well. But we're hoping, because this only has been there for about a year since we open sourced it, as the adoption increases in the coming years, we would be accepting hopefully more and more committers into the project.
Right. And how is it licensed?
It's free Apache 2.0. So we want it to be as liberal as possible. So we want everybody to use freely. So we licensed it under Apache 2.0.
Right. So that, and that means it comes with a patent license as well, because that's included.
It comes with a patent license. Exactly. So we do have, in fact, the original code had some patents, so those patents are licensed to use.
So now your description was very buzzword compliant, I have to say. And the Floss Weekly has quite a diverse audience with people who are not typically developing enterprise software. Maybe you could let us know what comparable products Turmeric relates to in the commercial market or even in the open source space, so people have got a better idea what to compare it with.
Sure. So, yeah, I mean, it is unfortunately a list of buzzwords, but I can, you know, time permits, I can explain all of those. But the comparable products is something that you would get, like a Fusion middleware from Oracle, for example. Their server suite within the Fusion middleware, or, you know, Glassfish open source middleware component, or Apache CXF, for example. There are significant differences and why this particular one has certain, you know, benefits, which we can talk about, but it's really comparable products are those. Any commercial products from Oracle, you know, of course, now BES and everything is all merged into Oracle, so it's all single product. And open source one, quite a few. Apache CXF and some parts of maybe Mule and FuseSource and things like that.
And how widely adopted would you say Turmeric was? How many different sites are using it to make production code run?
Outside of eBay? Well, that's a bit hard to tell. I mean, we have about maybe known 3 to 4 people that are using it in production. But this project itself was open sourced only last year, so it's been there for about a year. So we're, you know, adoption has not been taken off as much as we would like it to be. But we're hoping that this year is going to be the turning point, where it's been there for sitting for a year. People have started playing with it and have seen the benefits, and maybe they are beginning to use. But sometimes in open source, as you know, people don't necessarily come and declare that they're using it in production. It's hard to tell. But we know, as they've told us, four of them are using it in production.
Hmm. Okay, so Sastry, you talked a little bit about the alternatives to Turmeric, and you mentioned like the advantages that you have. So can you tell us a little bit about why you decided to pursue this kind of road instead of just using another alternative that was already there? What kind of advantages does Turmeric give you?
Sure. So that's an excellent question. So in fact, Turmeric started, the development of Turmeric started about 4 or 5 years ago, right? Back then, 4 or 5 years ago, when we looked at it, one of the first and foremost thing we were looking for is high performance and high scalability. So what we mean is we wanted to have the complete overhead of the platform or the middleware itself to be under, you know, under 3 milliseconds max, 3 to 5 milliseconds. We couldn't find any product, either open source or commercial, that met our needs, and then also had the kind of scalability that we're looking for. Like I mentioned, billions of messages are being served by these services on any, at any given time using this framework simultaneously, right? So we didn't find any product. So going back to specifics, one is that if you look at any of the existing comparable either open source or commercial products, for example, especially in the internet world, right? So you can't expect somebody to have a specific format like XML, JSON, FastInfoSet, you know, SOAP or what have you. What we needed to have is a give a flexibility for our developers to come in with any data formats that they would like and be able to natively take those data formats and then construct the Java object and hand it off to the business logic. And there were a lot of the existing open source and commercial product that follow something called JBI, the Java Business Integration, which has the concept of a normalized message. So they tend to normalize the incoming message data format into an intermediate format. And from that intermediate format, then further deserialize into the object. And we couldn't afford that because that step would easily take a few milliseconds. And so what we wanted is a way to natively serialize and deserialize. And that's one of the things that we have done. Performance, scalability, native serialization, and everything is policy driven. Any software that when you deploy to an enterprise, you have to have, you know, govern it with security policies, authentication, authorization policies, and what we call traffic control or rate limiting policies. And then all of that stuff, we're using a declarative way to define those policies. And that's exactly what we've done. We used XACML, the extensible access control markup language specification, to implement a policy-based declarative language and console. And everything is done through that. In other words, users focus on their business logic. As far as performance, latency, developer tools, policy governance, everything is included in it as a whole single package. Right. And I can go on and on. I mean, if you, depending on, I want to give you a chance to, you know, for ask further questions, but something I want to quickly mention, just one other thing called local binding. In other words, sometimes even though you're developing these components, reusable components as remotable services, when you're designing them, but when it comes to deployment time, especially in a cloud environment or in a local data center, you might want to put them in the same JVM. How do we allow them more optimally? So we have something called local binding for that. So, I mean, these are some of the few things to mention, but I'll pass back to you.
Yeah, so, well, you mentioned the local binding thing, so we may as well discuss that a little bit more. So how exactly does that work, and what's the advantages of it?
Right. So local binding, as you know, I mean, first of all, services, as you know, everybody thinks as web services and services as all remotable components. You design your interface, you design your service, implement your service, and have deployed someplace so that any application that wants to consume that service will make a remote call, send a remote message, whether it's SOAP, whether it's JSON, whether it's REST, XML, what have you, right? Now, there is a cost involved in serializing the data object that you are trying to send from your object format into this wire format, where whatever is the wire format, XML, JSON, doesn't matter, right? That's one. Second, there is a network latency. No matter how fast is your network, there is a network latency from your consuming application to where the service is. What if you have a performance critical application that you cannot afford to go through that serialization cost as well as the network cost, but at the same time, you want to keep that abstraction separate. So what we do, what the local binding allows you to do is just when you're about to deploy your application to a data center, you switch to something called local binding where the call actually doesn't go through the network. It directly bypasses and gives it to the server-side framework and bypasses the serialization. So, but rest of the things about security, authentication, rate limiting, everything else still applies. It is just the optimization that happens beneath the layers. That's really what local binding is all about.
Okay. And so what kind of things are you, I mean, I don't know how much you'd be able to tell us about this, but what kind of things are you using it for internally? What kind of applications are you building on top of it within eBay right now?
So all of the eBay basic business flows, whether it's, eBay is in the online marketplace and payments business, mm-hmm. and all of our, buying, selling items, reviews, trust and safety services, payment services, all of those services are built on this framework. And pretty much, and by the end of this year, actually, we intend to convert almost the entire site flow, anything that runs on these services. We're almost there, but we're finishing up the rest of it. I mean, there isn't any specific domain per se. Pretty much the entire eBay logic, and eBay has several thousand developers, and pretty much every one of them, when they build their business logic, use this framework to build their business logic. I mean, there are other frameworks to do the presentation and UI and data and so on, but this is for business components.
Because I'm curious to know who the kind of the target audience is for this outside of eBay. Obviously, you've developed this for your own use and stuff, but in open sourcing it, who do you think will benefit from it? Who are the kind of people you think could make use of Turmeric?
Okay, so that's a good question. So two types of consumers, right? One is anybody who wants to develop a client application that wants to talk to services deployed anywhere. They don't have to be in eBay. For example, somebody might be developing a mashup application that wants to talk to some API from Google, some API from Facebook, some API from eBay, and so on, right? This framework, the client-side portion of the framework, is useful for them to easily develop a mashup-like application talking to these services. That's one part. The second set of developers are people who want to develop services themselves and host within their enterprise. I mean, kind of similar to what we have done, kind of similar to what Google, Facebook, or any of these guys have done, right? But I would imagine there will be more of the consuming side of the application developers than the producing side of the application. But nonetheless, there are two separate parts that we offer.
And we've got a question from the IRC channel that's buzzing away as we go along here. So JIC asks, is it a good idea to use this for small-scale applications, or do I have to be the same size as eBay in order to make some kind of useful, to use it in some kind of beneficial way?
Right. So it's a good question. So absolutely, you can use it for small scale. What we have done is it is usable in a large scale, and it meets the performance and the scalability criteria that we need. It does not mean that you cannot use in small scale. And the idea is that you should be able to use a small scale. Yeah, absolutely.
Right. Okay. And I suppose what you're saying about the scalability and that, the advantage of doing something like this, even if you only have a small scale application right now, is that these things grow. And there's nothing worse than finding out that you've got to rewrite the whole thing to make it scalable. It would be good to have that built in from the start.
Excellent point. Even if you never know. Today, you might be small scale, and hopefully your business grows, and a few years from now, it's going to be large scale. But yes, this should work uniformly well, whether it's a small scale or large scale. The point there being that if you're only small scale, sure, you're not necessarily leveraging all of the scalability aspects of it, but the capabilities still exist.
So, Sastry, all looks very interesting stuff there. I'm interested in just zooming out a little on the project here. Looks like you use GitHub to host it. Is that right?
That is correct. So initially, the project started off as an SVN repo on the site itself, but very quickly, then we moved the sources to GitHub so people can easily fork and make their own contributions. Or if they decide to pull back, they can push it back. And yeah, absolutely.
Do you get very many pull requests?
We have gotten few with respect to patch requests because, as you know, this is a middleware complex piece of software. So unlike any simple, web application type of stuff. So people will take time to understand and then contribute. So, yes, we have gotten some pull requests. Yeah.
Right. And so what would you say was your overall attitude to governance on this project? Would you say that because you're on Git, you're very happy for everyone to do their own thing? Or are you trying to get together a critical mass of community here?
So I think we're pretty open. So the very reason why we put it on the Git is actually we want people to be able to fork and do stuff on their own, and then the license allows them to do that. But of course, if they would, we would love them to contribute back to the original source, but they're not required to, as you know. So we're pretty liberal on this stuff.
Right. Mm-hmm. So I was be looking at your website, and you have quite a few other projects up on eBay. Apart from Turmeric, what would you say you're most proud of?
So there is another project called QL.io. QL.io is essentially built on Node.js. So effectively what this is a client-side simple aggregation and orchestration engine, kind of similar to the YQL, if you guys are familiar with it. If somebody wanting to write a mashup application, let's say if somebody wants to query without actually having to write a program, something like, I want to find out, all items in iPads that are within less than 10 miles from where I live. Let's say somebody wants to make a query like that. And the eBay, of course, exposes API to query the items. Google exposes a mapping, essentially map API to find the location. What if somebody were able to do like a SQL-like statement to say, select star from items where items.type in iPad and item.location less than 10 miles from my.location. Suppose if you're able to do some kind of a SQL statement like that, how nice would it be without having to write a program? And internally, then imagine somehow this as this imaginary relational table for item maps to item service, the imaginary location table maps to the location service from Google, and it will be easy for the users to write those massive applications. QLIO is an engine that's built to do exactly that. So you can just define your SQL statements like that and actually goes and orchestrates the data between multiple services, not necessarily from the same company. They could all be coming from different companies, and allows the people to develop those mashup applications. It's built on Node.js. Yep.
Right, right. Mm. So this looks this looks a lot like a project we used to have at Sun. That within QLIO, you simply put in some code that stubs up the external API, and you then have some verbs you can use or some data structures you can use within QLIO to work with it.
That's right. So you can map your services back as a relational table, and optionally you can also add in a custom code if you want for that aggregation. But if you don't want to have custom code, you can just map your service calls to this table and then put those SQL verbs as a client interface. That's
right,
correct.
Right. And then because you're running on Node, you can leave the scalability of this to Node.js rather than having to worry about making QLIO itself scale up.
That is correct, because this is actually purely an IO bond, because it is orchestrating the data between these multiple services, and Node.js actually works great for IO bound tasks.
Right, right. So do you do a lot of JavaScript at eBay?
This is we're beginning to now. Well, client-side UI applications have always been doing JavaScript, but with the advent of QLIO, we're also doing the server-side JavaScript now.
Okay. So I was looking at your site, and you have an IDE for JavaScript up there as well, I see.
That's correct. So, in fact, that was the second project that we open sourced called VJet. It's kind of similar to Eclipse. If you were a Java developer in Eclipse, it's easy for when you're writing Java code for code completions and what have you. So, make it productive. And what VJet gives you is essentially the same kind of capabilities when you're writing JavaScript code. How do you debug the JavaScript? How do you have auto completions? How do you have all of the schema checks and whatnot? So, that's what that IDE is about. And a lot of the folks actually are using it outside of eBay, where the JavaScript developers are, especially given that how popular that Node.js has become. Many people are started using that.
Right, right. So the overall looks to me like you've taken a core part of your infrastructure here and tried to get the community involved. Was your motivation here to do a good thing for the community, or was it to spread the load of development?
Well, definitely, when you open source a project, like I was indicating to you earlier, you don't expect people to just come and contribute right away. I mean, that's not our expectation. That'll be great if somebody comes and contributes, but that's not our expectation. Our motivation is to obviously have the community benefit from what we have done, because this is not something specific to eBay Business Logic. It's a common technology platform that others can benefit. But, I won't lie. Obviously, we are also expecting some benefits where people who have worked on it, it's probably easy for people to understand what eBay does, because we want people to know what eBay has done and what eBay can develop. And so attract talent. If somebody wants to come work for eBay, hopefully they will know ahead of time, hey, what are some of the things that eBay has been working on? Maybe that interests them. Maybe they will go approach us. Maybe it's a way for us to attract talent. So there are some intangible benefits for eBay, but it's more importantly, we wanted to have the community, benefit from what we have done. And hopefully if they start liking it, maybe they will contribute. I mean, that'll be awesome at that point.
Hmm. Now, Sastry, I noticed that on a lot of these sites here, like the QL.io site, you've got You've got listed the eBay Software Foundation, which I've not actually heard of before. So what is the eBay Software Foundation and what's its purpose?
Okay, so excellent. Actually, this is something that we just very recently created. So in fact, the site when we created the ebayopensource.org, the site that we've been talking about where we open source these projects, that still, you know, came under eBay, eBay Inc., eBay.com. Right. Sometime at the end of last year is when we actually formally created a eBay Software Foundation, which is obviously, you know, affiliated to eBay, and which is an independent organization. And all of the open source efforts and everything else is actually affiliated to that organization. That's just a, you know, for legal purposes. There's really nothing more to it.
Right. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, lots of projects do this, you know, set up an independent foundation. And I know a lot of open source and free software developers feel a lot more comfortable when a project is kind of put under the ownership of a foundation rather than under a specific company as such. So I think that it's definitely, it sounds like a positive step.
Carry on. So, no, it is definitely a positive step, even though it, it actually is just a legal matter. But you're absolutely right in the sense that, you know, giving the comfort feeling to the community developers to say this project is put forward by a company versus a software foundation, it gives them a much more comfort feeling for them to start leveraging or contributing or using it. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah, definitely. And we've asked you quite a lot about the kind of the background of Turmeric and these other things, these other projects that you're working on. But how many, I know you said you've got, obviously eBay is a huge company, you've got thousands of developers, but how many people are actually working on these projects? Can you give us any kind of ballpark figure for that?
On which of these, specific to Turmeric, or, you know, or you're talking about in general all of these projects?
Well, specific to Turmeric, I suppose, because that's the main thing that we've been discussing.
Right. Specific to Turmeric, I would say internally eBay, we have teams both in San Jose here and China and India. So we have remote teams there as well. So I would probably say maybe overall 50 people, 50 developers.
Hmm. And presumably coordinating all those developers, this is something we talk about a lot on Floss Weekly, because a lot of the projects that we deal with are so geographically distributed. How do you kind of keep it all together? Obviously, you're using Git, as you said, and how do the guys kind of collaborate? Is it mainly through Git and you know, instant messaging, things like that, VoIP and so on?
It's probably all of the above. I mean, there is no, it's not an easy thing. I mean, we use Git communication, we use email, we use chat, we use Google Groups for communication. So, I mean, it's all of the above. So it's...
Yeah. Right. Okay. And on a kind of a more kind of personal note, I suppose, how did you become interested in this area of software? I know you've got quite a long history in this. You've been involved in many different companies over the years. So how did you become, you know, so interested in this kind of distributed computing model and the whole open grid thing that you've been doing?
Right. So great. I have been, up until the time that I actually joined eBay, I've been on the other side of the place where I worked for IBM, Oracle, and had my own company, mostly working from operating systems to networking to distributed computing. I was also the architect for Oracle's J2EE server before, you know, Sun came along and whatnot, right? So I've been building these products, a variety of several different versions of these products for various companies, including my own in the cloud and grid computing. What I wanted to do was to actually leverage that expertise and actually use it for an internet scale company and apply that logic to make it scale. So when I came to eBay, for example, 5 years ago, eBay was a complete monolithic system, and you know scalability was a problem at that point. Problem in the sense that you couldn't just keep on adding more machines to just bring more juice out of it. You need a way for leveraging and building reusable components. So what I came to eBay, brought in that expertise, and actually have eBay re-architect their enterprise middleware and the site architecture to start reusing the service orientation. That's kind of what interested me to bring here. And I would just say we have fairly gone along the journey quite a bit and cruising along right now.
Yeah. And I know we already kind of asked a little bit about the reasons for open source in this, but do you have a personal kind of interest in open source and free software and some of that? Would you say there's a kind of an ideological thing involved?
Absolutely. In fact, I am personally, in fact, one of the startups that I worked, I was a founding member as well, called Spike Source, which was heavily into promoting open source components. And I actually truly believe in open source because, you know, at the end of the day, you want to contribute and you want to get feedback from everybody. So that's a healthy environment for building innovative software. So I have, you know, this definitely is an, you know, ideological thing for me to have happen. So in fact, I helped eBay in the open source initiative to start open sourcing some of these projects as well. Absolutely. This is my personal interest as well. Yeah.
Excellent, excellent. And it's going to seem a bit disjointed, but I want to jump back to a Turmeric question because the IRC are still kind of discussing this as we go along. And some people are asking about the kind of the comparisons between, say, what you're doing with Turmeric and a .NET-based kind of environment. Can you make any comparisons there?
So, I mean, .NET is just another environment, another protocol, another data format. And what Turmeric allows you to do is that even if you develop your client application or a server application using .NET, you can use Turmeric to develop the other side of it. In other words, it is standards-based, protocol agnostic. So it's .NET is just a type of software. It's really hard to compare. Where we are is that we built a standards-based software that is scalable, performant, and it is everything which is through policy-driven. So from a comparison standpoint, if you're asking for scalability, I can't quite compare the scalability of that because it's a closed software versus open source. But from a standard standpoint, you can absolutely use a .NET-based application talking to a Turmeric-based application, and we have tested that.
Right, okay. So you've tested that. I mean, presumably this is, as you say, I mean, Turmeric can accept all kinds of different inputs, so you could be using SOAP or JSON or whatever else it might be. So you're just kind of feeding the stuff in between them.
Exactly.
Right. Okay. And I noticed the, you know, if I want, you were saying that you can use almost any kind of data structure, if you like, with this, or you can use different types of input. Can I create my own type of input for it if I wanted to add one, or I've got some bizarre data structure that no one else has got? Can I put model that in there?
Yes, you can. So there is a way for you to plug in your own data formats and protocol. And in fact, recently, when we realized that Google Protocol Buffers is a more optimized data formats, and in fact, we internally use it, so we went ahead and added the Google Protocol Buffers as well. So now we're looking at adding Apache Avro or Thrift. So essentially, you can add pretty much any data format or protocol if you don't currently see it in there. I mean, that is the whole salient points of the framework. Because, you know, rest is assured, one thing is for sure, that 2 years from now, there's going to be some other format somebody's going to come up with and say, hey, this is more optimized and more performant and what have you. So we wanted to build a framework such that we can still continue to leverage those as new formats and protocols popped up.
Mm-hmm. So all this all absolutely fascinating. I had no idea that eBay was moving into open source here. Do you have any other projects that are going to be coming out as open source in the future? Can you give us any sneak previews here?
Yeah, we started working on this cloud-based messaging services and APIs, and that's probably something that we would be considering open sourcing our start, you know, as this year. And then there are a few other projects, but, you know, we're still finalizing some of those. Because the trend is definitely in that direction. Starting last year, now everybody is looking at, you know, not only any new projects that we're starting, but even the existing projects. How can I turn them back into, clean them up and actually put them for open source? I mean, certainly it's going to happen this year.
Right, right. Mm. So when you say cloud, what are you talking about there? Is this OpenStack you're talking about? I'm guessing it's not Amazon's cloud APIs that you're using.
No, it's not Amazon. So, well, eBay has its own cloud environment. What I meant by cloud-hosted API, messaging API, is essentially a messaging service, REST interface-based messaging service for applications to exchange asynchronously the messages in the internet scale. I mean, if you want a comparison, kind of similar to, I mean, it's not exactly that, but kind of think about Amazon SQS, if you're familiar with it, right? A queuing service, a messaging service. Now, the service itself is going to be written in such a way it can be hosted in a cloud. I mean, you can choose your favorite cloud. I'm not going to say which cloud. I mean, once it's in the open stores, you can host it in OpenStack, in your Cloud Foundry, Amazon, wherever, or, you know, internally we host it in eBay Cloud. But the point of where you host it doesn't matter. The capabilities is what we're talking about. So.
Right. So this is all getting into territory that I probably can't tease you into any further, finding out about eBay's internal cloud architectures there. any other projects? I mean, you know, so you're doing a framework, you've got message queuing, you've got your JavaScript toolings. Are there any other areas that you're thinking of moving into?
So that, you know, we have internally already a lot of these areas. What we're going through right now is one by one and figuring it out which ones make sense. We also, that, you know, we want to make sure that we want to put these projects that are making sense to a broader community. And we're identifying, because we have lots of internal projects, any new projects that we're developing, certainly we want to start off as an open source, assuming that it is useful for the broader community. So there's some security, OpenID-based implementations that we have. We're probably going to look at open sourcing those. And let's see. So we have, you know, in fact, the PayPal, you know, the payment folks and the StubHub folks have a bunch of these projects that they've been talking to me that they're interested in open sourcing. So you're probably going to see, if you ask me this question a few months from now, we're going to have a better idea on the list of those projects.
Right, right. Well, I saw that you you launched Turmeric at OSCON last year, so we can maybe hope that at OSCON this year there'll be a great big stack of eBay announcements to do with open source projects.
Yeah, so we are hoping that OSCON is still a few months away. Certainly, eBay will be present at OSCON. Yeah.
Right. So how is it at eBay when you're going to go and open source something? I remember at Sun, it was always very interesting going through an open source process because there would be some folk who were not very excited by the idea of having an open source project, other people who thought it was the perfect strategy. What is your internal process like in going open source? Is it very smooth and easy, or do you have a lot of convincing to do?
Well, the first project when we did Turmeric, obviously I would not lie, but we had a lot of convincing to do, because as you exactly said, there will be some folks who would say this is perfect, so there will be some other folks who would say, well, what's the value and so on, right? But, you know, the first one or two or three projects is always going to be not as smooth. But now we've gotten into rhythm where we really don't need to convince or explain anyone internally to say why we're doing this or what we need to do that. It's just a matter of figuring out what the right projects are and what's the right structure is to put them out there. I actually wanted to mention one thing before I forget. So eBay also has created this yet another subsidiary company called X.commerce, which is purely an open source based company. So in fact, we have Magento. Some of the e-commerce software, there used to be an open source company called Magento. Now eBay owns Magento. eBay bought Magento. So X.commerce is an open source. You might want to check that, X.com. And they are fully heavily into promoting open source and doing a lot of the, including non-platform based software as open source based software. So you might want to check that out.
Right, right. Mm. So would you say that eBay has an open source strategy? Or would you say that eBay's strategy includes open source?
eBay, let's see, I'm trying to understand the difference. eBay certainly has an open source strategy. And so what's the second part? Does it include open? What's the difference? Can you clarify?
Well, if you've got an open source, if you have a strategy that is an open source strategy, you'll be seeking to promote software freedom as much as you can. So you'll be looking for opportunities to promote software freedom. That was really what I was doing at Sun. Whereas if you talk to Oracle about this, they'll say they don't have an open source strategy. They'll tell you their business units exploit open source as a tactic. And they're not looking to advance software freedom.
I see. So from that standpoint, eBay has an open source strategy. So we're not just necessarily looking to use open source. We actually have a strategy to open source definitely our platform components. Actually, if you don't mind, my power is running out of my laptop. I need to go get a power cut. Can you excuse me for 30 seconds?
We can try.
I'll be right back. Excuse me.
Wow. This is a first.
All very interesting, isn't it, Dan? Discussion we're having there.
Yeah, sorry, I was just going to say, like you, I didn't have any idea that, not that I keep up particularly with what eBay are up to, but I never really thought of them as, I don't know, a big open source kind of proponent or anything. So it sounds like they're really kind of moving towards a new position, which is really, could be really good, actually, I think, to have another big company.
Very encouraging, yeah. I think, actually. And what's even better is we can reuse this material in the closing.
that is true.
Apologies for my apologies.
Okay.
I'm back.
Welcome back, Sastry. We're almost out of time here. Anyway, we mm-hmm. do have some mandatory questions we do have to ask you. Okay. And I don't know, you know, looking at your background, it looks like you've actually been involved in quite a few technology projects over a number of years. So asking you Emacs or Vi does seem appropriate.
Yeah.
So Emacs or Vi, Sastry?
I would prefer Emacs.
And Randall will be pleased.
Randall will be a very happy boy. And what about when it comes to programming? From the look of things, you're a Java guy, so it's inappropriate to ask Python versus Perl. But I will anyway. Python or Perl?
I would say Python.
You're a Python guy.
Wow.
Yeah,
okay.
I can see that. So Randall won't love you quite so much. Okay.
All right.
That's good. So we're coming right up to the end now. Are there any other points that we haven't discussed that you think we ought to know about?
So just one quick point, and I know some of the folks on IRC channel are watching and looking at it. So the question is, we certainly welcome anybody to either contribute or start using it. Give us a feedback, simply. We're not necessarily expecting people to contribute, but just start using it and give us feedback and what we're doing right, what we're not doing right, where we can improve, where we can make it better. And that certainly is appreciated. And that's all I would want to send a message to the people who are listening.
Oh, that's brilliant. Well, thank you very much for coming on Floss Weekly. We appreciate you joining us, and thank you for what eBay is contributing to software freedom. We all appreciate that too.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. I appreciate that.
So. Thank you.
Thank you. So, Dan, what do you think about all that? Did you have any clue that eBay was doing any of this stuff before the show?
No, not at all. I mean, I'm not privy, obviously, to the inner workings of eBay, but a lot of people see them as not, I'm trying to think of the right word, not a very open source kind of company, which I'm not sure whether that's been true or not in the past, but it sounds like they're really moving in the right direction. And I think having a company of that size, because they are undoubtedly a huge company, putting some weight behind open source projects has got to be good for all of us, really.
Absolutely. I'm interested to see that it's tools that are right in the heart of their operation that they're making open source here as well. That framework, it looks like it's used by all sorts of projects in the company. And I'm interested to see that they're willing to experiment with something so important to them.
Mm. And obviously, you Simon, have personal experience of a big company attempting to open source a lot of their key projects. So did you see any parallels between some of the stuff you encountered at Sun, maybe, or anything
well, not
there?
Really, because at Sun, the code that was being made open source was all revenue software products. And the gamble we were making there was that being open source would lead to adoption that would drive business. Whereas what eBay are doing here is... for a mix of pragmatic and philanthropic reasons, they're opening their code up to allow others to collaborate over production code that they're using. So I think they're in quite a different set of circumstances. And I imagine that, with all respect, I think their arguments internally about it are probably easier than the ones we faced.
Right. Okay. Well, I won't quiz you too much on that one. But if people want to find out more, we should have said this before when Sastry was on, but if people want to find out more, the place to go is ebayopensource.org. That's the website where you can find out a list of all their open source projects, find out more about Turmeric and the other stuff they're up to. So don't forget to check it out.
All right. And tell me all about what you want to plug this week, Dan. Because I'm sure there's got to be something going on in your life that you want to tell us about.
Yeah, there is. Should we do that? Should we do that before we get to the what's coming up on the upcoming guests and so on?
Right. Yes. So let's do that.
Let's do that then. Since Randall's not here, we're breaking with convention. I suppose the best place for people to find out more about what I've been up to lately is to go to danlynch.org, which is my main website. And you can also check out some of this stuff that I've started writing a technology column for a Liverpool-based website called Seven Streets, which is very popular around here. And you can go and check that out. If you go to danlynch.org, you'll find links to that. I've been writing about the history of gaming and computer games production in Liverpool, which a lot of people don't know about. But we had some big ones like you know, Wipeout and Lemmings and some other games like that were made in Liverpool, which is quite a claim to fame for us. And then, of course, there's Linux Outlaws. We'll have some information coming up from Fosdem, which I know Simon was actually at. And my co-host, Fab, was at Fosdem recently getting interviews and things like that. So if you head to sixgun.org/Linux Outlaws, you can find more information there. And we'll have in the next couple of weeks, I would imagine, stuff coming up. And then we've actually got... And the next episode of Linux Outlaws, which I recently edited, it's not out yet, is actually going to be another one featuring our friends at the Open Rights Group, which I know Simon is involved with. And we had Jim Killick and Peter Bradwell from the Open Rights Group in London come on to do something that we're calling the Open Rights, the Digital Rights Update. Let me get that right. Where we talked about ACTA and SOPA and PIPA and all of those things, and also some of the interesting stuff that's going on in the EU at the moment, like the requests from the EU to do not track request that they're looking for, some of the W3C stuff that's going on, and all of that kind of stuff. So you can check that out as well. But that's all over at sixgun.org/Linux Outlaws.
That's all very exciting. Well, I don't have a lot coming up after going to Fosdem last weekend. I'm sleeping off the hangover. And you'll find everything that I'm doing is on webmink.com. You'll find me on Twitter as Webmink, on Identica as Webmink. And you'll find me writing on Computer World UK. And I don't have any upcoming appearances, so I'm out looking for them. Do invite me to come and speak at your conference. You got anything that I can do for you there, Dan? I don't know if there's anything coming up that I could...
Any maybe, conference?
Yeah,
I'm sure I can find something. We haven't got any conferences booked at the moment. We haven't booked the next Og Camp yet, but it will be coming up later in the year, so I'm sure we'll let you know. But looking down our list of... what's coming up on the show, we should probably mention some of the upcoming projects.
Good idea.
Next week we're going to have, where are we? Oh yeah, I'm back next week. I should remember that. Our guest project is going to be Vega Security Tester. And David, let me get this right, David Miraza is going to come in and talk to us about that. And that's a product for testing the security of your website, which as somebody who's developed a few websites, some of them probably insecure in my time, I quite like the sound of. So you can use this tool to kind of, it'll test all the traditional kind of attack vectors, you know, all the cross-site scripting, SQL injection, all those kind of things. And it will give you a kind of a security report on how your site's performing, which is really useful for a lot of people, I would imagine. And then after that, following week, we've got Crystal Hammer coming in to talk about Stunt Rally, which I don't know a hell of a lot about, so I'm going to have to go and look that up. And then we've got John Mark Walker coming in on the 7th of March to talk about... on the 29th of Feb, I can't read the sheet. On the 29th of Feb, we're going to have John Mark Walker coming in to talk about GlusterFS, which sounds very cool. And then Carsten Wade's coming in to talk about Overt, which is going to be on the 7th of March. And then there's a whole load of other stuff coming up. But if you do want to get a project onto the upcoming projects list, and you think there's something we're missing out on, then please by all means let us know. And the best way to do that is to actually contact the project yourself or contact the project leader and have them send an email to Randall, because then they go straight to the top of the list, they can send emails to merlin@stonehenge.com. That's the place to send your emails. Then we'll try and get the projects that you want to hear about on a future episodes of Floss Weekly.
Yep. I'm actually pretty excited about the other three in the quarter that you didn't mention there, Dan. There's Delta Cloud coming up after that. And there's LibreOffice is coming up. Don't think LibreOffice has been on Floss Weekly before. And they've got their 3.5 release coming up soon. And they've also just incorporated as a non-profit independent foundation. So they've reached the end of a cycle there. And we've got two of the key movers in that, Michael Meeks and Charles Schultz, coming in to talk to us. And then we're finishing off the quarter with a project called Aeolus that I've never heard of before. So I shall be looking forward to finding out what that's all about.
So, excellent. Sorry, go on. I was just going to say...
After you.
After me, right. We're too British about this. That's what it is. it's all kind of after you and I say old chap and all that. So I was just going to say, if you want to find out more about the show, you want to find out what's happening, you need to go to twit.tv/floss. And that actually redirects you to the new URL structure, but I'm lazy. I just put twit.tv/floss and it rewrites it for me. So you can go there and you find a link on there to the upcoming guests spreadsheet, which we've just been reading through. If you want to find out who's coming on, you can do that. And also, obviously, make sure you follow us on Twitter and Identica and Google Plus as well. There's a Google Plus page for Floss Weekly now, which we're all managers of. Randall's added us too, so that's cool. So if you want to find us on there and keep up with us on the social networks, as they say.
Excellent. Well, thank you everybody for putting up with us, called in at the last minute to make up for Randall having he's got some injury that he's got to sleep off. I don't think it's alcohol induced at all. I think it's actually a muscle injury he's got. Hopefully he'll be back next week and you won't have to have us guessing what to do next. But that's it for Floss Weekly for this week. Thank you very much for watching.